You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel on Dishin' and Swishin' on Hoopfeed. We do these podcasts each week, and you know, this one, you know, it's sort of sad, and it's sort of happy, and it's sort of celebratory, and it's sort of saying goodbye all at the same time. You know, without further ado, it is my pleasure to bring back on to Dishin' and Swishin' one of the true legends of the WNBA, and that is Tisha Panichiaro. Tisha, how are you today?
I'm okay. A lot of mixed emotions, of course. Everybody's talking about my retirement, but just have a heavy heart right now because we didn't make the playoffs. We fell short, and there was nothing more that I wanted for this franchise, and of course for myself to also finish on the higher note that I could, the highest note that I could, and that was, of course, to advance to the playoffs. It was our goal from the beginning of the season, and right now it's just so sad for the franchise and all the family and the coaching staff and the fans. You know, we put a lot of hard work into it, and it's just disappointing.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this is one of those seasons that's been so strange between, you know, the serious injuries that have affected things, and in your team's case, certainly, it, you know, is Epiphany Prince in the first half of the year and Sylvia Fowles in the second half of the year, but also just with the break in the Olympics and time off, and it just seemed like the team, when you came back from the break, it seemed like you had a hard time getting it cohesive again.
Well, I think everybody had to deal with a break. So, I mean, we have a lot of excuses if we want to, you know, focus on that. And, I mean, of course, when we lost Tiffany, you know, she was having an MVP type of season, and she saved us a lot from a lot of games just with her winning baskets and clutch shots. So the thing is, we never really had all 11 players at once throughout the whole 34 games of the season. But I think a lot of teams can complain about that. You know, I think that's just the wear and tear of our bodies playing overseas and playing all year round. But again, still with all the injuries that we had, we still had a great chance of clinching playoffs, and we just kept shooting ourselves in the foot and, you know, missing opportunities. When New York would lose, we would lose, and we can never really get ahead, and that's just on us.
Well, it was certainly, you know, when you guys came into Connecticut and we had you in a couple times this year, you know, the sky was certainly, you know, all out 100% of the time, you know, giving it every effort that they had. So, you know, nobody can accuse you guys of, you know, not doing everything that you possibly could to try and make that playoff run. And, you know, the team has nothing to hang its head about, even though I know you're disappointed that it had to end the way that it did.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we play hard. I mean, sometimes you think you play hard, and sometimes you watch film and you feel like you could play harder, and that's the toughest part. But you always have to, you know, remind yourself that you're playing against great teams, great athletes. Everybody's competitive, even the teams that already clinch. You know, you play always to win. You never play to lose. So, I mean, you have to give credit to the other players and to the other teams. But, again, I just felt like we missed a couple opportunities. There's a couple of games that I just thought we should have gotten. And, you know, is the type of thing, woulda, coulda, shoulda, and now it's too late to do anything about it. And, you know, I've been in this league for too long to know that every game, every possession matters. And I just felt like, you know, some games we just let them, you know, slip away.
Well, it is what it is. So let's move on for at least for the purpose of this conversation. And
yeah.
And you know, so I go to the Chicago Sky website and I see this picture. It says Tisha's top 10 and talks about the best moments. You know, and I see you in Yolanda Griffith's arms, and I keep thinking to myself, you know, gee, I must not have seen this picture before through the tears running down my face here in Connecticut after you won that.
Yeah, that's probably one of my all-time favorite pictures. You know, it was a hard fight. I felt like Sacramento, we worked so hard in the Western Conference to get to the finals, and sometimes we're so close, but yet so far. And, you know, that was just, I knew that, you know, yeah, it was one of my favorite teammates of all time. She's just a warrior and somebody that I love going to war with. And that was just the culmination of you know, we did it, you know, and I just jumped on her lap and we both hugged and just said how much we were glad that we finally got that championship. And I'm sorry it was against your Connecticut Sun, but, you know, that's definitely the highlight of my career.
Well, I will say that, you know, it was, even being here in Connecticut, it was really hard not to smile when we did see that picture as it happened, because, you know, there are teams that are villains and there are teams that are still heroes and play and win with class. And, you know, it was really hard not to just really like that Monarchs team, because the players involved, yourself, Kara was on that team then, you know, DeMaya and all, class people in a great group.
Absolutely. I mean, I love that team. And to be honest with you, I enjoyed my time in L.A. And, of course, this year has been amazing just being with a five-star organization here in Chicago. But, I mean, if I had my way, I would have retired in Sacramento and I would have only played for the Monarchs. Just a great franchise, a great city, great fans. And that team was definitely special. You know, I always compare it to college teams where the atmosphere was very family-like. And those were 12 great years that I had in my career.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, as bad as it was for the league to lose Houston, you know, when they folded with their history, you know, there was just something about the way that the Monarchs had that relationship with their fan base that, you know, you can see some of it with Seattle now. But it's a special connection. And I know that you've continued that. And I know that when you've gone out there to try and meet up with fans and stuff when you had time.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those fans to death. You know, they still, to this day, they have their hearts broken, and my heart is broken with them, you know. And they did so much for our franchise and for the city of Sacramento, just supporting our team, that it was really sad, especially the way he went about it. You know, everybody was kind of blindsided from him, and nobody had a warning. And when I go back to Sacramento, which unfortunately is not, I haven't had much time to be there between playing overseas and playing other cities now in the United States, but when I go back, I always try to reconnect with them, you know, have dinners or whatever, just to show my appreciation and just to share memories and to continue to stay in touch. And they've been heavily supporters of not just the Monarchs, but of myself and my career. And, you know, I just want to show my gratitude for them.
Yeah, I recall that day when the news broke about what was happening. And if I recall correctly, I think it was you and Brunson. Did I remember you guys found out via Twitter?
Yeah. Brunson is like my sister, you know. She we have become like really, really good friends. I know she shares the same passion for the fans like I do. And you know, and that's the best thing about basketball. You know, I know I'm walking away or limping away, but she's one of the many people that I met through basketball, and she will be a friend for life. So I'm definitely glad for basketball because of many friendships that I've made.
Well, you know, and you've certainly developed them with players in those cities where you were, and the fans, and you know, that were there, but also across the country. Because, you know, everybody that has watched the WNBA, you know, you were voted one of the 15 greatest players in the history of the league. You know, you've played on that championship team, multiple All-Star games. Now, highlight, I had to be winning the championship. But other than that, I mean, can you differentiate between, you know, those high moments as to what really jumps out, or are they just all special?
They're all special. I mean, I did the top 10, and, you know, it was hard to come up with something because, they're all so special, you know, starting from being drafted to from Sacramento to winning a championship to being an All-Star to, I mean, there's so many things that this league and this country has been great for me. I never in my wildest dreams could imagine that basketball would give me so much. So I'm just thankful, blessed, overwhelmed with a lot of emotions. And, you know, it's been a great ride. And looking back, I wouldn't change anything, you know.
You know, the one thing, though, that I do have to ask you about is how did you actually lose that national championship game to Tennessee? I thought for sure you guys had them after taking out Stanford like the way you did.
I think Stanford is probably the reason why. I mean, we were down by 17, came back on Stanford, went to overtime. It was such an emotional and physical game. And then, I mean, not any disrespect to Notre Dame, but, you know, Tennessee had kind of a easy breeze.
Come on, I'll
say yeah. And then, you know, and then again, we saw ourselves down by 17 again with Tennessee, came back, and I just think we ran out of gas. I mean, of course, they had Shaniqua Holtzclaw and a great, you know, supporting cast around her. They had somebody, one of the all-time greatest coaches ever, you know, and I just think we ran out of gas. And, you know, that's one of the games that I wish I could get back in my career, because I would have loved for the university, for Oakland University, and for myself, our team, my coaching staff, and the fans that we could have gotten that championship. But, you know, when you lose to Tennessee, it's almost like, okay, it's like these days, it's like, hey, at least we lost to Tennessee.
That was quite a team that you guys had, you know, with Clarice and Nyree. I mean, that was some serious talent on that ODU team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we kind of just came out of nowhere. Nobody probably expected myself, Clarice, and then Mary Andrade to be that good and to help the team so much. But it was a great feeling to put ODU back on the map and being back in top 25 on a regular basis. And it was just a fun ride. And again, I had a lot of great times from Old Dominion and the 97 championship team that almost got the championship. It was fun time.
Is that something that, you know, not to try, obviously you've got a lot of time to discuss and you've got other things. Would you be interested in going and coaching on the college level?
Right now, no.
Just in the pros, just in the college.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I ask that question.
Right now, I don't see myself coaching. I think I'm a little burned out from being on the court and being on a regular basketball schedule. You know, the X's and O's, I think, like, I need to step away from a little bit, still being close, but not so much involved, you know, and I think it's very stressful profession. A lot of times you do everything that you have to prepare a team, and then the team might not perform. So, and you lose, and you're stressful, you don't sleep. So I need a little bit more salt, you know, a little on the softer side, and just relax a little bit, enjoy my family. You know, they miss so much of my life because I've been away for so long. I can just kind of go home and keep my feet up and just enjoy it. And I never say never to anything, especially when it comes to basketball, because I love the game that much, and I definitely want to continue to be close to the game that is my first love. And we'll see. I have a few doors that are cracked, and we'll see which ones open when I'm ready to open them.
Now, you're going back home, right? You're not going to be staying in the States for any time soon.
Well, I'm going to go home right away. My brother's actually getting married soon. So, you know, that's the only good thing about not making the playoffs is that I'll be able to attend his wedding on the 29th, which I wouldn't have been able to if we made the playoffs. I could never leave my team. Even though it's my brother, and hopefully he only gets married once, but I could never do that. So I'm at least excited about the fact that I'll be present at his wedding, and then I'll be home for a little bit. But I mean, for what I want to do, and that involves women's basketball, I have to stay in the States, because if I go home to Portugal, I won't be able to, you know, work with women's basketball in a depth way, because unfortunately, still more like a hobby. Even though I want to do stuff at home to continue to develop women's basketball, for what I want to do, it comes from living in the States.
I thought you had done some work with an agent over there. Is that, am I getting that right or no?
No, I did an internship with Wasserman Media Group. That's the agency that represents me. And one time I was recovering from an injury, and I didn't go overseas until late December. So I did an internship for a couple months in L.A., And that's one of the doors that I kind of cracked to see if I want to pursue that business of being an agent and representing women basketball players.
You just can't give up on these assists, can you? You're just going to help them make more money instead of more baskets.
Right. No, it's actually, my purpose is a little different. I think it's a great way to give back, signing young players and kind of showing them the ropes of how to be a professional and being a mentor and not just an agent to place them here and there. I think it goes beyond that. I think I want to be that big sister, that person that they can call 24/7 and know that I'm there for them, that I probably have lived whatever they're going through by experience and just be able to provide some kind of feedback and some kind of advice in that regard. So that's what I see myself doing. That's a way to give back to this game that I love. And we'll see if that's what's in the cards for me.
That's awesome. That sounds something that is well needed and really does show your passion for the game and the players that participate in it and what you've gone through. And that's something that you should certainly be commended about. You know, I do have one question for you. You know, going over this Tisha's Top 10 again, how come I don't see on here your first appearance on the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast here? I thought that was one of the high points.
No, that definitely wasn't. You know, I always respect all media and, you know, the people that support women's basketball on a regular basis. They have a special place in my heart, and you're definitely one of those people. So I commend you for everything that you have done to women's basketball and your continued support. It means a lot to not just me, but I know I speak for everybody and every player in this league.
Well, I appreciate that. There is one thing that on this list that I do want to get your feelings, and I'd love to see if you can recreate some of those memories. Though, one of my greatest moments that I recall in seeing was imagine what it was like to be on the court on that day.
Overwhelming. I mean, sometimes you have a bad game, you lose a game, you have five or six turnovers, then you go home mad and pissed off, and you just don't want to talk to anybody, and then you have somebody that is like your teammate, your neighbor, your friend that is dealing with a life-threatening disease, and just puts everything in perspective, you know. And being a friend of hers, I've known Edna for like over 10 years, and just her consistency, her fight, the warrior that she is, and it just taught me a lot, life lesson, you know. And I'm glad that I was able to share the court with her, especially on that day after she's been, you know, through chemo, radiation, and God knows what else. And her spirit, her smile, it never faded, you know. And it's just a great life lesson for everybody.
Well, it certainly is, and especially this week as the WNBA wrapped up their breast health awareness weeks and the pink uniform games and such, you couldn't help but not think about, you had to think about Edna through all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually texted her yesterday and I was just like, you know, it's pink game, it's breast health awareness game, and I always think about you, and I just send her a hug. And, you know, she definitely has taught me a lot, just how to live life and, you know, have a different perspective in life and sometimes not be so serious about life, because there's way more serious things than, you know, losing a basketball game or, I don't know, scratching your car or, you know, whatever it is. So she really dealt with, you know, a life-threatening disease, and I wish her the best. We're still very close, and, you know, I've learned a lot from her.
Well, Tisha, we've all learned a lot watching you play, and it's something that we're certainly going to miss on the court. You know, the flair, the flash, you not only made the passes, you made them fun to watch. And
Thank you.
We always will remember those things, and you were definitely one of the top 15 that played in this league.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your kind words, and I don't take them lightly, so I really appreciate it.
So is it time to to zip up the black leather outfit, hop into the yellow car, and drive off into the sunset?
No, I think it's time to just put on the bikini and lay on the beach.
That sounds a lot more relaxing.
Yeah.
Thanks again, and congratulations again on a wonderful career. Only the best to you as you go forward. And as you start signing more and more people, we'll talk about getting them on the podcast if that's the venue you decide to go.
All right. I appreciate it, David. And thanks again for all you do for the women's game.
Take care and goodbye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Dan Hughes of San Antonio Silver Stars, and you are listening to Dishin' and Swishin' and enjoying every minute of it.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, your host for the Dishin' and Swishin' World of Women's Hoops podcast each and every week on hoopfeed.com. And there is a lot going on. In the WNBA season has ended, the regular season portion. We've got the playoffs getting ready to start this week, and we had the WNBA draft lottery and some really hysterical fans, happy fans on Wednesday night with the results of that. And I'm pleased to have one of the best coaches to break things down, Gary Kloppenberg of the Tulsa Shock, joins me now. Coach, how are you today?
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
All right, Coach, so let's ask the big question right up front. You guys went in. You guys have never gotten a break with the ping-pong balls. And, at least you didn't get number four, but you did get number three. Your initial thoughts on getting that spot?
Yeah, well, that's kind of where we were slotted in. So, we at least ended up where we were supposed to, as far as chances were. So, I felt bad for Washington because really they deserved it. They didn't deserve that. When you really break it down, if it was really the right thing to do in our league, it would be that, realistically sit down and determine who really deserves it based on their stats, based on their personnel. That would be a true good way to do it, the right way. Unfortunately, the system, the way it is, it's not like that. So you have situations like this where the two most talented teams ended up with the top two picks. So, I think it's the system right now, the way it's set up. And I don't think it's good for our league just because, we only have, 12 teams, and we want parity. We want a league that's competitive from top to bottom. We don't want situations like that. So, but as far as where we ended up, I know people are saying, well, you feel bad, but, that's going to be a very good player. That's where we ended up because we were going to battle it out to the end of the season. So, that's going to be a very good player in that slot. So, that's pretty much how we look at it now.
Well, the breaking down, you said a lot in a short period of time there, so let me just slow it down for 1 second. And the first thing that you mentioned was the flaws that seem to be inherent in the system the way that it is. I understand when you have an NBA with all the teams that they have, having the lottery the way that they have it, but, as you mentioned, it's important to grow the teams and it's important to grow the leagues, and when you only have this many teams in the league, to do it this way just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me either. Now, let me throw out to you my idea is, I kind of think that what might work is take the last three seasons' records and average them together for the teams that didn't make the playoffs this year and assign the picks that way, because then at least this year Phoenix is an aberration due to the situations they have. Last year, Los Angeles was somewhat of an aberration because of injuries. Team had, was the cupboard was left bare. Washington has struggled for a couple of years now. And if you went in the system like I'm proposing here, then you guys would have ended up with the top picks.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, and I think that's what the league front brass needs to explore. We're really not like the NBA, and you can't. I just don't think. I think for the health of our league going forward, we need something like that. That can, you could subjectively or empirically figure out, And I think that's a good idea, Dave. Like the 3 years. I mean, we all know. I mean, everybody really knows within their hearts what would have been the right order, So that's my only thing. I know they have their system in place, but I just think for our league, it doesn't really work, with a league of 12 teams to keep the league healthy and to grow it. I just think that's what you're looking, they want to really look at long term.
One thing that this didn't do for you, you do mention the fact that, you're going to get a great player at the number three spot. There's no question about that, especially in a situation this year where there are three that seem to be, at least going into the college season, head and shoulders above the others. But it doesn't alleviate your stress or agita about your center position, where Liz chose not to play, and that's always going to be a question mark now. And, it would have been a nice problem to have
if you had most, I could say confidently at number three, you're not going to have Brittany Griner around. So it doesn't exactly help you in that position.
Right, right. No, that's true. And then, you know, that's a major issue for us to solve in the offseason. And we know Liz can be a great player, and I just feel like, you know, it was a difficult year for her, the Olympics, and I just think she, my gut feeling is she just felt like coming for 10 games, I think she may have been looking out for those players that were here. She felt like by the time she got over here and got going, you know, it'd be pretty much over. I mean, I think there were a number of factors, her youth and experience, being able to go from Olympics, go back into the league. You know, she has never done that before. So I think there was a lot of factors that she took in under consideration to make that decision. But, you know, it's a high priority for us. I really believe she wants to play in this league. This league can make her better, can really help her in her long-term development. So I think, you know, she wants to be in this league. So that's going to be a major priority for us. I mean, we have, in her, we really have, you know, a franchise-level player, just like a Griner or a Deladon. So, you know, that's going to be a major priority for us in the offseason and get Liz back into the fold.
Now, and then, of course, the next person that always comes up is Skylar Diggins, and that would seem to be a logical place to start. And, of course, I'm not going to ask you to make any comments about any particular any of the players. But you are in a position where, you know, you can look at your roster and say, well, that figures. I've got Williams, I've got Latta, I've got TJ, should we decide to try and bring her back. You know, that's the one position where you are loaded.
Yeah, I mean, our strength this year was our guards. I mean, you see the games that we won and we beat those good teams, our guards really carried us and led the way. So, you know, that was our strength this year. So, but, you know, I think every year, you know, we were 9-20,
whatever we ended up, 34 games.
So we have to get better across the board. So we're going to really, you know, use this offseason to aggressively evaluate, you know, our team, evaluate what we could have done better coaching-wise. What could we do personnel-wise moving forward, the draft. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to get better. So I think, you know, we have a long off season, so I think there's we can do that in depth and really come out the other end with a lot of good decisions and ideas about us improving. I mean, our goal is to stay out of the lottery next year. We don't want to mess with it anymore. Okay, we're tired of it, so we want to make the playoffs. You know, that's going to be our push. So, we add a few of those key players that didn't play for us this year back into the mix and make a few, you know, with the draft and perhaps make a few moves. I think we're not that far off. I mean, I look at our team this year, even though we won 9, but there was, you know, 4 or 5 games that, you know, we could have won. I mean, perhaps we would have won the way we were playing at the end of the year, or and those losses early in the year could have gone the other way. And then you're right in there, nipping at Seattle's heels for the playoff spot. So even with this team we had as constituted, we weren't, I mean, we actually didn't make the playoffs, but we were not that far off, you know, 1 or 2 players or away from that.
Would you look at possibly coring Tamika Johnson? Is that something that you guys would consider doing with her being an unrestricted free agent?
No, Dave, we haven't really sat down and
thought
about it, you know, because we just ended the season. I just think, you know, what you really do after a season, just ended a few days ago, you kind of decompress and you let things sink in. I mean, obviously I'm going to probably go back, watch a lot of our games and, you know, get input from different people that have knowledge of our team, I think that's what you do now. You don't really do, you know, anything knee-jerk decision. So we have plenty of time to do that, and those decisions will definitely come.
And last question I'll ask you about your team and for this whole draft stuff for this year is, you know,
your team, one thing that nobody will ever accuse it of was not playing hard all the way to the end. It was. I found all season that I enjoyed watching Tulsa Shock games more than a number of other teams in this league, because just if nothing else, the effort was exemplary, and you guys had a great group of people that were really working hard. Do you have any thoughts, and I'll let you go with a no comment if you want to, about the fact that things went the way they did with Phoenix, ended up getting the second highest choices and ending up with that top pick, when there certainly has been questions about, not if not the illegality, but the ethics of the way that they kept some players out of their game?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, it's been well documented by a lot of people, that whole situation. I guess I'd probably be just probably disappointed in that the system, the way it's constituted at the moment, was manipulated, and I really think that happened. It's as it is, and then I really believe that's probably what happened. They found a way that they saw they were not going to make the playoffs, and that was their way to end up the way they did today. So, I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything that hasn't been said 1,000 times. So, I think it comes back to, having a really fair system in place that rewards the teams that most deserve it. You know, and I think this is, I guess it's like the NFL replacement refs. it's not fair right now. So, I think that needs to be addressed aggressively by the league going for the future, and we want our league to be a league of parity all the way down through, and for the most part, it has been, and I think that's where it needs to go in the future.
Well, the league in the present is going into the playoffs, and you are definitely a person that I would love to talk to about these first-round playoff series, because of the 9 games that you won, 4 of them were against playoff teams, and that's not even counting. You took Connecticut to overtime. You almost knocked off Minnesota a couple times. So you certainly played the playoff teams extremely close, and I think that you are well qualified to speak about what we should look for a little bit in some of these series. So since you guys are in the West, why don't we take a quick look to start with that first-round Minnesota-Seattle series, Minnesota with Seattle series, not at, obviously. Leafs come in as the number one seed. They're looking healthy, and when they're rolling, they're one of the toughest teams to beat that I've seen in years.
Absolutely. I mean, Minnesota is just very, very good. They don't have any weaknesses. Their strength, their guards are just tremendous on the wings and with Whalen, and they have toughness up front. They're deep. They come off the bench with a couple of players that will start for almost every other team in the league. So, Cheryl's done an outstanding job putting that team together, and they play extremely hard. So, I mean, that said, you have a whole new season with the playoffs. So, it's a 2 out of 3 situation. So, I think the teams, even in Seattle, to me, we had a lot of trouble. We almost had we had more trouble with Seattle than a lot of the teams for some reason. And it may just been matchups with them. We just had a hard time battling to get a win against them. We never really were in the games with them. So I have a lot of respect for them, especially with when we have Sue Bird and Lauren Jackson on the floor. I mean, you have 2 of the best players in the world. You're going to be in for a ball game. So, I mean, to me, the Lynx are favored, but it would not shock me if Seattle could get a game in that series. I just think it's going to be difficult to go into Minnesota and win on the road with the way their crowd is, the way they play at home. So, but like I said, with a 2 out of 3 format,
2 in Minnesota.
Right, and if you don't play well, I mean, remember last year San Antonio just about got up there. So, that's the thing about our league that's so great is, everybody pretty much from top to bottom is capable of beating anybody on any given night. And I would say that. So I believe Minnesota will probably come out of that series. Like I said, I think Seattle, now that they're in the playoffs and they got them all healthy, and I wouldn't sleep on Seattle.
Now, how difficult is it for Seattle to get things together as a team going into the playoffs? There's so many, the names are fantastic, but they haven't been together on the court very much this year between the Olympics and the injuries. You know, it's a team that on the offensive end just hasn't seemed to be able to gel.
Yeah, no, I guess we saw, for some reason, we always seem to get them when they had gelled. So, I mean, down here they played extremely well early on, and then up there they, you know, that was one of our few blowouts that we had all year, and they would just play it out of their heads. I mean, and they were clicking on all cylinders. So we've seen them at their very best, so I know what they can do. And, you know, and I think Coach Brian, he's a seasoned vet, and I think they've had this time, you know, this week to prepare. And you know, I think with those veterans that they have, with Katie Smith and Tina and Sue, I just think they, you know, they're going to be well prepared, regardless of what their record ended, what they ended up in the regular season. I think they're going to go in just playing loose, and they got nothing to lose to go in there into Minnesota this week.
Well, I think you're right. It should be a lot of fun, especially seeing the two, probably the two best point guards in the league. If not the world, going head-to-head with Bird and Whalen is always going to be a fun matchup as well. So that should be a real
sure.
blast. And then we get Los Angeles and San Antonio. Los Angeles, a lot of people picked them from the beginning of the year to be a strong team, but there were always questions about some of the makeup. There's the lack of a true point guard, but Kristi Toliver has had an amazing season, and, of course, Candace Parker is an MVP candidate. Elena Beard has stayed healthy, which has been a big help. And then on San Antonio side, again, all year everybody just overlooks them until the end. Dan's got them locked in at that number two or three spot, playing for the playoffs like he does every year.
Yeah, no, I mean, both Dan just does a great job. And, you know, he's got those veteran players that have been through it, they just play – they play well together, and they play very well against Los Angeles. I mean, I think they probably won that series this year against them, and went in there early in the year and beat them badly. So they're very capable of winning that series, no question about it. And, you know, L.A., to me, is a very talented team, you know, especially they're not as deep as Minnesota, but, I mean, their starting lineup is not talent-wise is right there with Minnesota. And when they're clicking and playing well together and running, they're an outstanding team. So, you know, I look for that to be a really, really good series. A lot of, you know, close games. I mean, I just think those are going to be – those teams are pretty close in talent. And so, I think, you know, like I said, San Antonio has confidence against them from their past experience. So I think that's going to be – an intriguing series.
Well, I think that L.A. wants to play anybody except the Tulsa Shock in the playoffs because you guys own them.
I don't know about that, but we, for some reason, you know, a lot of times they just match up, and for some reason we seem to match up pretty good. To be honest with you, Glory Johnson probably outplayed Agumake in the games we played them. I mean, she really came with a high energy, and, you know, that was pretty much a wash there. And then our guards, we always had success really getting after them, and we turned them over and, you know, caused some problems with our pressure against them. You know, and we put Glory on the canvas, and that bothered her. So for some reason, it seems like certain matchups, certain teams can have problems with it. Ours was Seattle, and then probably L.A.'s was us this year.
You know, you look at the teams, and the reason that I just have to think Minnesota may come out of this is, you know, you got the you always think of these teams, you think of the combos. You got Sue and Lauren, you got Becky Hammond and Sophia Young, you know, you got Candace and Toliver there, but then you got
Lindsay and Maya Moore and Simone Augustus, and they just keep running out stars that are going to have a different. If one person has a bad game, you got somebody else there that's ready to pick it up for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Minnesota is that they have so many weapons. I mean, I guess this isn't going, and Maya just will go off on you. I mean, they, and then they come in the bench. I mean, one game, Wiggins went for 27 on us off the bench. So, you know, they're just so good, and they with so many weapons, you know, I just don't see many weaknesses. If it's any, it's probably, you know, front-line depth. I mean, they, you know, although they have some decent players, they're coming off with a rookie, and, you know, I mean, I think, and Tosh doing a great job. I think, you know, if you get an athletic, go out here with an athlete, too, that can cause a matchup problem. So, you know, but all in all, they're with Brunson up front, I mean, she can get you a high double-double because she worked so hard. I mean, to me, they're definitely the team to beat.
You know, and as if this team didn't need, you know, any of those intangibles, they just go to the White House a week or so ago, and all Taj has to do is sit there in the locker room and say, remember what that was like? It's time again. that's just not there.
Yeah. No, I think that's what you find. It's a whole new mentality when you hit the playoffs. I mean, everything is, the intensity is elevated, the preparation, you know, the hype leading up to it, everybody. I mean, you're getting everybody's A game when you hit the playoffs. So usually when that happens, you know, that's that team. The better team usually comes through, especially in those short series. You know, it's difficult. You can't sleep on any of those teams. Like I said, Seattle, with time to prepare, I would expect a pretty decent game that first round.
I think so, too. Now, unfortunately, the way this league is set up with this uneven schedule, you know, you guys played those teams four or five times, and you see the Eastern Conference twice. But if it's one team that you do know, it's the Indiana Fever, with your long background with Coach Dunn's team there. And they get the Atlanta Dream for a second consecutive year. And, of course, you got to see that series up close and personal last year. And I'm looking forward to that one. I think that's going to be a really close, exciting, hard-fought series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, to me, it's kind of a little rivalry that's been built there since they've been, you know, have played them in the playoffs the last few years, Indiana has. So. And, you know, the thing with Atlanta, they've been there. I mean, they've been in the championship 2 years in a row. So they know it doesn't matter where they end up at the end of the regular season. They know how to step up in those playoffs. And home court really means nothing to them. You know, I think now with McCautry back in the fold, I mean, they're a dangerous team. I mean, they're playing well, and they match up, you know, well with Indiana. Although I think Indiana won the series this year, but I think that's going to be a really close, a war. I think that's going to be a war, that whole series. Anytime you have McCautry on the floor, I mean, she's kind of, you know, she's one of those players, she's like catching, in a way, mentality-wise. You know, she's going to find a way to win. She's going to get you there to the end and have a chance to win. So I would expect the matchups to be great in that series and be a close one.
One of the more intriguing ones that I can see coming up is, you know, with the adjustments that Coach Dunn did this year with the lineup, moving catching to more of a four position, Zealous getting so much more at the three. Now, if they try and match up with Atlanta, that means that you're probably looking at Zealous on Angel this year as opposed to Catch, which is, you know, she may be able to shoot over Zealous with the leaping ability that she has, but Zealous is going to be in her grill the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good matchup. Zealous is, she's tough-minded, and I think she's one of those players that will take the challenge on to at least try to make life difficult for Angel, you know, and I think that was a great move by Indiana to move her to the four. She's a problem there at the four for a matchup problem. You know, she can go outside. inside she can post you up. I mean, she passes the ball. I just think, you know, that's probably a reason why they've been so successful. Along with, you know, Larkins, I think, has really stepped up for them. She's given them that frontline toughness that they've lacked in the past. So I think you're seeing her getting, even starting lately, getting high minutes. And, you know, even though she might be a little undersized, she's really like an undersized five. But, you know, she can bang with all those bigger players and is physical. So, and then the way they're shooting the ball. I mean, I think the emergence of, with Breon January, her, her improvement, you know, the way Katie shot the ball. You come off the bench with Poland, who's it's almost an automatic with her sitting in those corners. So I think they've got a really good chance to go a ways. You know, I think they have to. They have to play physical, though. I mean, if they have a weakness, it's sometimes they'll get a little bit soft rebounding-wise. So I think that, you know, and I'm sure Coach is hammering them on that all week, you know, especially against Atlanta, who's a pretty physical frontline team.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see those inside matchups with, you know, Indiana running in the different posts between Larkins and Davenport and Tammy Sutton-Brown, of course. And Katz playing in the post them against DeSouza and Little. And because I do think that they will be able to get inside on them a little bit and create some mental issues. Erica can get frustrated and commit silly fouls. You know, Sancho has a tendency to resort to three-point shots if she's getting pushed around a little bit. I mean, Williams has done an excellent job since taking over that team, getting Sancho back inside where she belongs. She's had a dramatic decrease in the amount of shots she's taken. But it's still a situation that they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I agree with that. I think, Fred, that's a difficult situation to take over like that and under the circumstances. So he's done a really good job to get them back focused and playing extremely hard. And they're a team to be reckoned with. I mean, they've got the – And DeSouza is an outstanding frontline player. She's got a lot of good stuff around the rim. She rebounds. She's physical. And then Sancho, you know, it can go inside, outside, great defender. And they have excellent guards. I mean, I think Tiffany Hayes has really emerged as a nice player in our league. I mean, that was a great pickup by them, and she's been contributing. She caused some problems on that other wing with her quickness and ability to get to the rim, and Harding's just a seasoned pro, and she can make those big shots in a close game too. So that I just think that's going to be an outstanding series and close. And then I just think it's going to be a war. You know, those teams have gone at each other; they know each other well. You know, it's a great rivalry. I think that's been built brewing the last few years.
And one thing that Coach Williams pointed out to me on Sunday when they were here in Connecticut was Angel and Erica, between the Olympics and the trials and tribulations of Angel, have only been on the court together for 8 games this whole season. So you know, they're just starting to round into form a little bit within the, you know, that frontline combination. So we shall see, that's for sure. And then,
absolutely. I was going to say, it seems like that happens with Atlanta. I think it happened last year. And they went in there. They ended up,
Did Erica miss a playoff game against you guys?
It's possible, yeah. I remember last year they went in and beat Connecticut on their home floor. So they're the type of team mentality-wise Atlanta is. They don't care where they play. You know, and they can go in on the road and beat you. So they're a dangerous, very dangerous team.
Well, then let's look at the other matchup in the Eastern Conference, and that's the top-seeded Connecticut Sun, who really struggled with you guys here in Connecticut. It was a close game, but not as close back in Tulsa. And New York, who some say backed into the playoffs because of the way Chicago played at the end with Sylvia Fowles not being available. You took them out in a big game down the stretch when they had a lot riding on it. What are your thoughts on those two teams?
Well, to me, I think Connecticut is just a better team than New York. However, again, you know, you have New York anytime you have a pond deck draw on the floor, you know, the way Carson is playing, Powell is a dangerous player. I mean, they're capable of pulling off an upset. I don't think they can win that series. I just think Connecticut's better. But again, like I said, you have that level of player and competitors, you know, that Poindexter and that group are, and you get into a playoff, even though you might have backed in or didn't play that well during the regular season, it's like a rejuvenation. It's like, okay, it's a whole new season now. You're 0-0, and that's your attitude you take into the playoffs if you're that fourth team. So I just think Connecticut's a better team than that.
Now, Carol Lawson this year has had a huge impact on that team, playing at the best level of her career. You've seen her, of course, you know, over the years, both in Sacramento and then, of course, in the East against the Fever when you were there. What do you see that is so different about her game that maybe some of the other people may not notice that aren't as in depth as a coach like you?
I mean, I just think she's really committed to getting herself in just unbelievable shape. I mean, that was the best. Her body is the best it's been in her whole career. I mean, she's quick. She's mobile. I mean, she's in great condition, and she's so focused that, you know, she could always shoot the ball, but she's improved her ball handling. She's improved, you know, being able to play at the one and two, and then, you know, she's just a killer. I mean, she's going to hit those open shots, you get her. So, I mean, I just think she's put the time in and has perfected her game, and she's probably had she's definitely had her best year of her career up there in Connecticut.
And is Tina Charles the most valuable player in the league?
Man, she's doing good. I mean, she's just a force. You know, you can count on, you know, you can write it into the box score every night, like 18 and 10. You know, she's just so steady. And, you know, she's definitely deserving. I mean, I'm not sure how those guys will vote it out, but, I mean, obviously they wouldn't be where they're at. That Connecticut team would not be there where they're at without Tina. And she's another one. She always adds something to her game every year. I mean, she comes back better and better each year, and she's still a young player. So, you know, Mike's done he does an outstanding job coaching, and, you know, I think the East is really going to be, you know, it's going to be very interesting who comes out of the East, because there's, I would say that any of those three teams, the 1, 2, and 3 seeds are capable of coming out of the East.
Well, you know, you mentioned Mike T is the coach there. Now, there's a good possibility that tomorrow he will be announced as Coach of the Year. And there is a number of people that I've spoken to that thought that the head coach of the Tulsa Shock deserved consideration for that award. What do you think of that?
I mean, I don't really put much thought into that or credence. I mean, it's really nice that to be thought of and, you know, like that. But, I mean, I think absolutely there's some very deserving coaches, you know, that are in the playoffs too. So, you know, I don't put that much on you know, those personal awards. It's an honor to be mentioned with that group. But I think, like I said, Mike, there's some very deserving coaches up that are in the playoffs. And Mike, probably as deserving as any of them.
Well, so now let me put you on the spot to end this. So give me your picks to who we can expect to come out of the semifinals and move on to the conference finals.
Okay, let's see. Well, yeah, I got to go, obviously, with Minnesota. You know, I'm going to say L.A. I just think because that home court, I mean, I think that could be the one that turns it just because those teams are even, but that, you know, having that home court with a crowd, you know, they're going to get a great crowd in there, and I think they really respond from their crowd. So,
well, they're not at Staples tomorrow on the first game.
They're not at Staples Center
the first game. They're going to be at the Galen Center for the first game. They got bounced out of the Staples.
Okay, yeah. Right. Well, that's
interesting. They've played there before, too.
They'll still get a pretty good crowd in there. I think that's probably the key. You know, they're sleeping in their own bed. They're at home. I mean, the home crowd. And though, like I said, I mean, San Antonio, they don't rattle, and they play pretty well on the road. So, you know, I would not be surprised if there was an upset in there. I just think, you know, things went go as they probably should, and L.A. plays well at home. I just think they might have the edge in that series.
And how about the East?
Man, that's, Connecticut, I think, should come out of that series. I think, you know, they have a chance. They could run the table, I think, with New York and even get them down there. The other one's going to be close. I mean, I just think the team that wins that first game, I think, is going to win the series, you know. And I think it's going to be a very close game. I got to go with Indiana, though, Dave. I mean, I just think.
I was just going to say, we can let you have some homerism in there if you want.
I got to go with them. We just played them yesterday, and they had a couple starters out, and they're, you know, they're hitting on all cylinders. They're playing really well, and they just shoot the ball so well, especially in their building. I mean, they're just, they shoot it well. I think the key is they got to, you know, I think Davenport really needs to come to play and produce up front, be really aggressive. I think they got to get something out of here up front, coming off the bench. So, but I got to go with them in that series.
Sounds good to me. I think those are outstanding choices and well thought out, I can tell. Coach, I want to thank you for taking the time, you know, not just today, but throughout the season for coming on the show. And I really appreciate it. You know, and the one thing is, you know, you got one thing that's a big advantage on Phoenix, though, you know, for the now, and that's for the next 6 months. Corey Gaines has to hold his breath and wait and hope that nothing happens to Britain.
Right. You know, hey, nowadays they're going to be like the Miami of our league, you know.
He's going to go up and dunk, and he's going to say, no, put a mat underneath her.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know. No, so yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, a lot can happen. Obviously, in the off season. I mean, it depends a lot on you know, the team's needs and where they want to go too. So, you know, we're happy to have that third. You know, it's a great asset to have the third pick this year. So we're gonna try to, you know, see if we can make a huge leap next year.
People forget about Tiffany Jones coming back too, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
And she could have a huge impact.
She's a warrior, you know, and she's we lacked her frontline toughness and rebounding this year. So no question, she's going to really come back, and she's hungry to come back after she has her baby. And I think she'll come back with a vengeance and really have a good year next year.
We'll look forward to seeing it, and we'll look forward to talking to you hopefully through the college season as well, getting your thoughts on some of these players as things go on and what's going on.
Sounds good, Dave. Anytime.
Coach, take care. Good luck to you, and enjoy decompressing for a little while. Enjoy that off-season a bit.
Thanks, man. See ya.